The Tom Woods Show, episode 1903.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, Tom Woods here. Catherine Hewig is back with us today. She is just outstanding. She's been doing tremendous data-driven work during this whole fiasco. She's got a great, great Facebook community called Understanding Ohio COVID-19 Data. I'm going to link to all her stuff at tomwoods.com/1903, and we're just going to check in on what's happening over there. It sounds like restrictions are being lifted, but I want to get the whole story, and there's a lot to tell. Catherine, welcome back.
Thank you for having me again.
Let's talk Ohio for a little while here. I was recording an episode not long ago, and I realized as I was speaking that I didn't have the information at my fingertips that I wanted to have. Your governor for a long time has been saying there's a particular metric that he's looking at, and that when a number of other states started to drop mask mandates and remove restrictions, he said that he was unmoved. We have a scientific figure here that we're looking at. It's going to be down to 50 cases per 100,000. And when we reach that, then we'll think about lifting mask mandates and restrictions and so forth. But then, very recently, we got this announcement that I guess June 1st, they're going to lift restrictions or something. Is that what it is? Is it June 1st?
June 2nd.
June 2nd. Okay. So, but very, very close. And so I thought, okay, well, one of two things happened. Either they reached that number or the governor just decided to act with it. I mean, at some point I have to stop doing this. So now's as good a time as any. But I don't actually know which one of those two it really is. So I wanted you to explain what really happened.
So there's a couple of different things going on here. One thing that we're pretty suspicious about that what happened here is the last time you had me on because I had that viral video from my testimony before the State House. And that was in support of Senate Bill 22. Senate Bill 22 allowed the General Assembly to rescind all of Governor DeWine's health orders. But because they didn't have enough to put in an emergency clause so it could go into effect immediately, it has to wait for 90 days. So the General Assembly can't rescind all those orders until June 23rd. So there is a pressure on Governor DeWine because, again, in Ohio, we have a Republican governor and we have a very Republican General Assembly as well. So this is very awkward in a political sense here. But the General Assembly is very much, they're done with this. This is ridiculous. They see the damage that's being done to Ohio. They're going to rescind those orders. They already have the bill ready up, the concurrent resolution ready to go. And it's very in your face. So our speculation is pretty much that he chose to put that date out there finally because he wants to prevent getting egg all over his face. But in answer to your question about the 50 cases per 100,000, no, we are not there. Currently, I believe we've just dropped below 100 cases per 100,000. But when he first put this metric into place back in, I think it was mid-March, they said they were doing 50 cases per 100,000 over two full weeks. And that's a really important thing to understand, because they're still counting the sheer number of cases the same way, but you are counting it over a very long period of time. Now, the CDC only counts over 7 days, and they come to, we see these numbers all over the place, right? You see other states, oh, they've got, you know, 50 cases per 100,000 in this state or that state, but we in Ohio count over double the time, so we essentially double or more the number of cases per 100,000. And we actually, at the time when he first put this out, a bunch of us were doing the calculations based upon the number of tests being given in the state of Ohio at the time, that there would be no way for us to ever reach 50 cases per 100,000, simply based upon false positives and things like that. Now, interestingly enough, in recent times, over the last 3-4 weeks, our cases per, ever since he announced that he was going to release us on June 2nd, if you look at our testing numbers, suddenly they've started to drop by a lot. And interestingly enough, our cases are also dropping by a lot. And now Governor DeWine is coming out saying, oh, look, we're going lower and lower. It looks like we're going to reach about 50 cases per 100,000 right about the time I'm releasing most of the orders. But if you look at the numbers, it looks like it is almost entirely based upon the number of tests being given.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was wondering how they would ever wind up getting out of that. And there were ways. I mean, I wondered how Biden was going to walk through all this. And he could have scaled back the PCR tests. He could have, I mean, there are a lot of different ways if you just wanted to save face that you could do it.
Yep.
And so I was wondering if that was the kind of thing that was going on.
Yep.
Now, are there people who are calling him to account for this, the hysterics, saying, hey, wait a minute, this is too soon?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, there's still a lot of hysteria going on here, definitely. There are definitely people, I see some news reports pretty much every day, do you think this is too soon to take off the mask mandates? And there is a lot of commentary saying, yes, it is. And especially in Ohio, the whole mask situation has been insanely intense. I mean, I know you're in Florida where you have some choice in the matter, but in Ohio, you don't. And it's really aggressive the way it's happening here. Even though Governor DeWine has followed along with what President Biden was saying about you can take off the mask if you're vaccinated, people are still not taking it off. People are still too afraid to take it off, but they aren't afraid of COVID. When I talk to people, when I'm out, people aren't afraid of COVID. They're afraid of other people. They're afraid of other people ratting them out and losing their job. I know already a couple dozen people who have been told straight out, either you will get this vaccination or you will lose your job, or you will get this vaccination. And if you don't get this vaccination, you will be required to wear a mask in perpetuity.
But it looks to me like a lot of people intend to wear it in perpetuity. I mean, they've just been told they can take it off. I was at Walmart the other day. Walmart has said, if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. Now, I would say still 90%+ people were wearing them. I'm sure it's more than 10% of people in my area have the vaccine. I don't think their employer is going to fire them for actually abiding by Walmart's own policy. So something else is going on here. And it makes me want to mutter under my breath as I walk by these people. You know, I it's very, very hard to maintain this charade much longer. At this point, how could you possibly think this is doing any good? I mean, one country after another, we've seen there's some article. It doesn't matter if it's what country it is. It's been case after case after case. We get an article about here's how country X defeated the coronavirus. And it's always because of masks. And then 3 weeks later, there's a huge spike. And no journalist ever goes back and says, gee, maybe I was oversimplifying when I attributed the success of country X to masks. No. Country X is now ignored. On to the next country. It makes me crazy. How could you still think these are doing any good?
I think it's all based upon psychology at this point. If you look at, I mean, especially in the state of Ohio, we have this situation where it is a psychological experiment, what's going on. And it's a marketing thing where you no longer can think rationally. You are bombarded by all of these feelings, really. Here, at least, they really propagandize it in terms of fear, in terms of respect for others, in terms of all these different things. And it's just constant drumbeat of the power of the mask, and you need to be scared of this virus, and you're going to kill grandma. And if you take it down, then you're a bad person. And it's just this constant drumbeat that's all the time. And it's a really hard thing, I think, for people to be able to mentally walk away from something they've been doing for more than a year. How do you square that in your mind that all of this has been for nothing?
Yeah, I think that's a big, big problem for a lot of people. And so therefore, we have to continue acting as if there's no Florida, acting as if the lifting of mandates all over the place hasn't in fact led to nothing, as we all predicted, that we have to pretend there aren't huge events going on in Texas and elsewhere. There was just a Foreigner concert in Orlando last night. You know, Foreigner from the 80s. You know, they were performing in a concert. This is going on. We don't have piles of corpses by the side of the road. So we have to, I guess it's a mental block. We just have to pretend that's not happening and keep worrying about the Indian variant or whatever it is that's on their mind these days.
I mean, also just that thing right there, though, that's one of the things they've been doing. They've been doing this for over a year. They've been preventing us from settling. And that's one thing that you do. If you want to keep somebody afraid, you keep changing the variables. You keep changing what to be afraid of. You can't allow it to sit still. So they come up with the new variant. They come up with all sorts of different theories. Now, what's popping up again on my feed and stuff is business about long-term effects of COVID and all these things where they just keep cycling through, trying to find something new to make you afraid and something new to confuse you so that you can't have that time to stop and think and just in that way of, yeah, no, that didn't work out so well. So let's end this. So they just keep adding to it and adding to it and adding to it in such a way that nobody feels really stable, except for people like us who are already kind of skeptical, obviously, that could watch it happening, while other people are just simply trying to go through life and they just kept getting bombarded too quickly with all these different kinds of ideas that kind of sound plausible, but they don't have the time or willingness to go in and actually dig in and say, oh yeah, this is totally junk.
There are so many cases of loss and sadness from what's been done to everybody. And it's not just people who have lost their businesses, that's extremely tragic, or people who didn't get a cancer screening and they're having health problems. There are a lot of things that are quite public that people at least are aware of. They know that this sort of thing must be happening. But then there are these overlooked stories. Like some, you know, I get email all the time because I have a newsletter and people respond to it sometimes. And just the other day, somebody said, I developed a really severe eating disorder because of all the weight I was putting on during lockdown. And I'm frankly not sure I'm going to be able to see this through to the other side here. Like, I'm really, really struggling. Now, nobody knows about that person, and I'm sure we could multiply that many, many times over. To me, the most tragic part of it all is that people who have genuine, let's not even call them grievances, just genuine tragedies they've endured because of the over-the-top policy response, can't say so in public. Yeah. Because they've been shamed about it, because there can be only one priority in your life. Other people are now allowed, and these are people who always talk about their belief in choice and you can live whatever life you want. And that these are the people who give those boring, ridiculous commencement addresses about you can follow your dreams and live the life that you want to according to your own values. Not really. Not really. We're going to tell you can have one priority and it's COVID. And as we pursue that priority, we're going to implement the dumbest policies that don't work at all. And if you don't support that, you're a terrible person. And if you complain that this is hurting you, you're an even worse person. I don't know what words to use to describe this.
Yeah, that one really hits home there, because I get the same thing. I get so many messages about different situations that are happening. And I actually told, I remember last time talking to you about that, one of my friends, her situation with her husband who has ALS. And that story just keeps getting more and more and more horrific. And it's all self-inflicted. Just, I think it was just yesterday, maybe 2 days ago, her husband needed a surgery and so that he could have sustenance, so he could have food, and so he could not starve to death, and that he doesn't get aspirational pneumonia. And so the surgery was set up. It takes a lot of prep work, very unpleasant prep work for several days in order to get to that point. Now, they suddenly call her up in the morning and say, well, he needed a COVID test, so your surgery is canceled.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And I mean, and it just never ends. And you have to wait 72 hours from the COVID test to the actual procedure. And to make this even more obscene is that this man had survived COVID. He actually he survived COVID over a year ago, an incredibly bad bout of it. So bad that I believe he had the highest tested antibodies in the state. I think that still stands today. He gave blood for antibodies to give to others. I mean, he is immune. He still has them, but he's had this surgery that is necessary for life taken away from him because they didn't do a COVID test. And there's just story after story after story like this. I mean, in my own family, I had two people die in the last year who died unequivocally from the lockdowns. They were healthy people. One of them was really young, in his 30s, and they died of a pulmonary embolism. How does that happen? Yeah. How do you die of a pulmonary embolism when you should have no, when you had no risk factors for it, besides just being stuck at home and not wanting to go out and being afraid or not wanting to deal with the discomfort of going to the hospital and having to deal with all the procedures and the nonsense surrounding COVID? There, I mean, just in my own family, there are completely unnecessary deaths that are completely ignored, considered just tragedy and, oh, accidental. And then in Ohio, you add even further where you have, especially to people in our long-term care facilities, where these are the people we're supposed to be protecting. This is what we're supposed to be saving, you know, grandma in the nursing home. And what they're doing right now in order to push the vaccine on these individuals. So I have a couple stories people have told me of their friends and loved ones. One of which is a situation where you're in a long-term care facility, and this is more, I think it's more of an assisted living situation. Already you have been prevented from seeing your loved ones for a long period of time because they are still under restrictions. And even on June 2nd, when Governor DeWine lifts the restriction, he is not lifting restrictions on long-term care facilities. They will still be under all of the restrictions that they currently are under. So this man who's just gone into the assisted care living, they've decided that that facility's decided that people who have been vaccinated are permitted to not wear masks anymore. They're allowed to go and socialize with each other, activities with each other, unless there is an individual who is not vaccinated. And that if there is a person who is not vaccinated who wants to participate in these activities, then
they all have to wear masks? I've heard this too.
Yeah. And it's just like you sit here and you're like, this is a psychological game.
Yeah. So the vaccines don't work. I mean, clearly, what more could they, how else could they put this? The vaccines don't work.
Well, it's not about the vaccines don't work. This is a psychological manipulation that they're doing.
Well, no, that's true. But I mean, but they wouldn't, there's no way they could.
Yeah.
What they're implicitly saying.
Yes.
They're implicitly saying we have no confidence in the vaccine. But of course, it's not. But as you say, it's more a pressure tactic. In other words, in reality, if the vaccine works the way they think, they have nothing to worry about from an unmasked person.
Yep.
Why would they be worried about this?
Yep.
I don't worry about somebody who's not vaccinated against whooping cough or whatever. I'm not worried about that at all.
There's another one that I just was told last night of a woman who has Alzheimer's who has not taken the vaccine, and she is under permanent quarantine in her room, and she's not allowed to come out. And they have a label on her door saying that she doesn't have the vaccine, and she's basically locked up in perpetuity until she takes it. And this is just...
Yeah. You see, you know, I get people saying to me, because my podcast and newsletter are not, in principle, just COVID-related. I talk about all kinds of topics, but I've obviously, over the past year, talked an awful lot about this. And every now and then I get a handful of people saying, all right, you know, I know this is really important and everything, but, you know, there are other things we should be now starting to talk about instead. And I do. I try to vary up the topics and stuff like that, but I really have been writing a lot about this. And whenever I get something like that, I'm reminded of the stories I hear every day. Like just yesterday, Alex Berenson on Twitter wrote the following. The Canadians have lost their minds. Ontario has 14.7 million people. One in 11,000 is hospitalized for COVID. Cases are plunging, vaccinations soaring. Yet Ontario has a lockdown as strict as any U.S. state had last April. No non-essential retail, playgrounds closed, etc. And the premier, Doug Ford, just extended the lockdown while promising if his subjects are good sheeple and hit vaccination targets, they may get 10-person outdoor gatherings in mid-June. And so I hear that and I think, yeah, I think we need to keep talking about this.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, in the end, Ohio is a horrible mess for sure. But when you actually hear about other places in the world as well, where it's even more insane.
Yeah.
And the worst part about it is that it's coming here too. I mean, anybody who believes that a green pass situation like they have in Europe isn't coming here is frankly, you know, they're lying to themselves. I mean, it is on the way. You can see the shape of it right now, definitely in Ohio, where, yes, you can't ask really, you can't ask people who come in the door, are you vaccinated or not? That's rough. But the employers are starting to push it onto their employees. And it will be a very short, quick thing to go from the employees needing to have it to, well, we're not protecting the employees if we don't know if the customers have it. And so there will need to be that system somehow. And how to prove who has it and who doesn't, and forgeries, how to distinguish forgeries and all of those things. And they've done it in Europe. They've approved it as far as I understand. And it's coming. If we don't say no, if we don't take this summer that we have where people can hopefully take off the masks and start to breathe free and start to actually, you know, break out of this psychological bubble that they put us in.
Yeah.
I mean, it needs to be done now. It's actually interesting. I don't know if you've seen this one image that had been going around actually for the last year from the Workplace Mental Health Institute.
No.
15 signs that you might be in an abusive relationship. It is absolutely fantastic. It is amazing because you sit here, especially I know from Ohio, you look at every single one of those 15 items and every single one of them is happening to us all. We are in this abusive relationship with our government, with our public health entities. And I think that also feeds into that business of why are people not freeing themselves? Why are they not ripping off the masks? Why are they not saying, I want to live my life now, let's go? I mean, we're all in this, you know, we're the abused spouse. We don't know what's real. We don't feel confident in ourselves. We're in this an abusive relationship. And how do you undo that kind of damage in 7 billion people?
Hey, folks, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, BetterHelp. Obviously, even under favorable social conditions, a lot of people suffer from depression, anxiety, stress, and so on. But the events of 2020 certainly did not help. And a lot of people have really suffered during this past year. You may be one of them. But I want you to know you're not alone, and that struggling to overcome a lot of these problems on your own may not be the best approach. Help is available, but you just got to reach out and ask for it. And with BetterHelp, you can start communicating with a licensed professional counselor within 24 hours. Send a message to your counselor anytime. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. It is so convenient, not to mention affordable and professional. The testimonials posted daily on their website really say it all. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/woods. I wish I could find it, but I was just today reading the results of an opinion poll, and it has to do with trends in people's opinions of Dr. Fauci. And the opinions are sharply downward in terms of more negative than it's moving to be considerably more negative, including among independents, which was interesting. I don't know about Democrats, but I mean, at this point, I just don't know how to talk to them. But that's at least something. And then I keep mentioning the trip I took. I live in Central Florida. Now, obviously, Florida has a lot of great things going for it. You have masks like crazy, though, in a lot of places. Not all, but a lot of places. Central Florida is pretty heavily masked. I had no idea what was about to hit me when I went up to the Panhandle, where they have beautiful beaches, beautiful, beautiful beach communities like Seaside, where they filmed the movie The Truman Show. And it still looks like that, by the way. You drive around, you feel like you're in that movie. It's a wonderful place. And I was not expecting to go into Publix, and which is our major grocery chain, and more than half the people don't have masks on. More than half. Go into Target, more than half do not have masks on. So they've just kind of gone back, and there's nobody, as I mentioned the other day, it's nobody's social distancing up there. Everybody's just going to the beach, doing their thing. It's just normal. I mean, everything's at full capacity. So that's the part of Florida that really is the full Florida that you hear about in the news. Yeah. It's up in the panhandle. And so there are people, I don't know what makes them different. I don't know if it's culture. I don't know what it is that makes them capable of getting past all this craziness. And other people are wearing two masks to the park with no one around. I don't know what the difference is.
It's the culture. It's who you're around and how you can express it. It's this. I mean, up here we have somewhat of a similar situation. I mean, I live east of Cleveland, and I'm actually kind of just right next to one of the largest Amish populations in the country. So same kind of story there, where they just go on with their lives. Yes, they'll wear masks if in very specific situations because they want to be respectful to our society here, but they don't distance. They haven't stopped anything that they've been doing. Gatherings are large and all those kinds of things, and they live their lives in a normal fashion. But just the situation when you're dealing with non-out groups like that, people will do whatever those around them are doing. If the majority seems to be wearing masks, everybody's going to feel like, oh, well, that must be what we do, because even if they believe that, no, this is the stupidest thing on earth, but you don't want to be that outsider unless you've already chosen to be an outsider. And I think that's one of the key things that needs to be done everywhere that we possibly can, is to make it the norm to not wear a mask, that everyone who can not wear the mask, wherever they can go to not wear that mask, each one of us will make it more the norm. And that's one of the things with the vaccines as well. This is another thing. When you look at the number of people who have taken the vaccine, we're still under 50%. The majority of people have not taken it, but they're trying to get this feeling like, well, everybody's getting it. Everybody's taking it. Your friends are getting it. All of the people around you are getting it. They're trying to use peer pressure on us in such a incredibly strong way. And it works, but it would only work if they continue to be allowed to have this narrative of it's the norm, it's the accepted thing. If the moment we can turn it to the other way around, where the accepted behavior is not wearing a mask,
then the mask will be in the trash the next day. Yes, I think that is the right way to think about it. I agree. When I got back from the panhandle, I decided, because the thing is, I'll tell, you know, some of my audience probably be ticked off at me, but I wear it when I feel like otherwise I'd have to fight. And I'm mainly because my attitude is most of the people I'd be fighting with are low-level employees who dealing with the public already is a nightmare, because you have unreasonable people 24 hours a day yelling at you for something you didn't do. And like, I don't want to add to that. So if it weren't that, then maybe I would be more defiant, but I do it for their sake. But then I decided, after going to the panhandle, I thought, no, I'm going to take a page out of Jennifer Cabrera's thing, that she has a hashtag, forget your mask, and that you should just walk into an establishment. And if you're asked to put one on, you say, oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot it, or whatever. Or of course, you know, there are people who will say they have medical exemptions. There are other strategies you can follow, but at least walk through those doors without it. So what I've been doing is, I just came home. I went to the local pub. There's no medical reason that I could be maskless in a Publix in Seaside, but I have to wear one in St. Cloud. There's no reason for that. So I just started just going in, and there are now probably 5 to 10% people unmasked in these stores. And as I walk by them, I just can't help saying, nice to see another normal person. I just say that to them.
Yep.
Nice to see another normal person.
Yep.
Now, the first time, by the way, I have actually been confronted. This was, I went to a Subway. Now, Subway is my least favorite sandwich chain, but in St. Cloud, we have a 24-hour Subway. And once in a while, if I need to get something so that the kids have, if I have to do something to the next day and I don't have enough in the house and the grocery stores are closed, I'll get my daughter a Subway sandwich. And I went in there without a mask, and then they said, do you have a face covering? Now, there are a lot of approaches I could have taken. I could have put one on. I could have said I had a medical exemption. And then if they challenged me, I could have said, well, I can call the Civil Rights Division if you'd like me to. I could have done that. But instead, you know, Catherine, I couldn't help myself. I just said, you know, and I know they don't do anything, right? You know they don't do anything. You have to know that at this point. It's impossible for you not to. Just look at the charts. So I just said, you know, I understand your policy, but there's just no way I can abide doing something foolish that accomplishes nothing. And so I just left. Now, that I didn't have to do that. Even now, that made the employee feel even worse. I get it. But I just, and I know that that's not the best approach, but I couldn't help myself. At this point, I was so energized by the experience of the panhandle that I just couldn't believe there was somebody who was actually going to challenge me.
Yeah. I mean, it's just figuring out a way to change that culture, because that is all this is. And again, this summer is the time to do it, because the moment we get back into the fall again, coronaviruses are coming back. Right? That's what they do. It doesn't mean that anybody's going to get sick from it, but people will be testing positive. They absolutely will. There will be another wave in the fall in terms of positive test results. But does it mean that those people are getting ill from it? Probably not. I mean, we've all been exposed. But we're dealing with, you know, there are other viruses in the world. People are going to get other illnesses, which will exhibit symptoms. And since COVID has been accepted to have every single symptom that has ever existed in humankind, you can have any sorts of co-infections and also test positive for SARS-CoV-2. And they're going to use that. So it has to be the culture change now. Right now, when we don't have those co-circulating viruses, when you can't have this manipulation of, the horrible diseases are happening and it's all SARS-CoV-2 again. We need to stop it now. We need to make people wake up. And I mean, I don't know if that's walking out helps any, but definitely when you walk into a place, don't wear that mask. If you don't have to wear it, don't. Because now is the time to re-normalize normal.
You know, I think one of the best things Bill Buckley ever said, and it is exemplified in the ridiculous response to COVID, which ordinary people knew was stupid and absurd from the start, but people who fashioned themselves as educated and sophisticated, they all went in for a hook, line, and sinker. Bill Buckley said, I would rather be governed by the first 2,000 people in the telephone directory than by the Harvard University faculty. Amen, brother.
Yeah, I'm definitely down with that one. I had mentioned, have you read the paper that I mentioned to you in the email exchange we had about the viral visualizations?
Yeah, talk about that.
Okay, so there's this paper, I think that it was MIT researchers, who went and they looked at visualizations for COVID in both Twitter and on Facebook. And what they did is they looked at what kinds of charts and graphs and the quality of them through Twitter, and also the connections made between the people who were putting those charts out. And they found that people on Twitter, you know, they made great charts. They were very high quality. They professional, very clear on what they're showing. And they also looked at the way that we all interconnected and talked to each other, and how we linked to different groups. And I was very proud to see that one of the major nodes in the skeptical corner was actually Governor Mike DeWine, because so many people in Ohio were tagging him on how ridiculous and stupid the Ohio measures were. Obviously, Alex Berenson and Ethical Skeptics were other nodes in the Twitter. But they also went in and they did a qualitative ethnography of Facebook groups, because, you know, Twitter and Facebook function in entirely different ways. In Twitter, you're basically individuals putting things out and then people responding maybe to that specific tweet or sharing them out. While in Facebook, it's much more conversational. It's a community. It's an exchange of ideas that happens around different posts. And so they went in and they spied on us for 6 months. They copied down all of the information from it, from what they called as anti-mask groups and anti-maskers, not prejudicial language at all. But they came in, they watched us, they watched how we behaved, and they wrote this ethnography about us and what we were all about. And what they came to, the conclusions were, is we were very sophisticated. We understand science. We understand its limitations. We make incredibly sophisticated visualizations. We spend a lot of time making sure that other people understand the science, how to go and look at the data yourself, and how to then use the information that you get and how to express it back out again in a new way, and to use that and leverage that to make changes like allowing kids back in school and things of that nature. So all of this, you know, you're reading this paper. I really have to say it's a fantastically well done description of what happened there, because I know what they were looking at, because they actually quoted me 3 times in here. So yeah, we were being watched. And
this paper got a lot of play in our community, if we can call it that, because it is kind of interesting to see them acknowledge that, hey, they're not a bunch of blockheads after all.
Nope, we are not, except for the discussion. In the discussion, it went from this beautiful, perfect description. I mean, the quotes they took of me, I sit here and that they captured exactly what our problems are and what my main thrust has been, which is this business of there are so many other problems we've created by trying to focus on this one. And they did a great job. And then they turn into this discussion, which is basically trying to pin on any kind of insult. After just spending a great paper talking about how sophisticated we are, how we have been able to do what people who have been paid to do this and who study this for a living have been unable to do, which is communicate effectively to the layperson what information is out there and teaching them and all these great things. And they just told us how wonderful we are at it, that we're so sophisticated, we understand science, all this. And then they turn around and try to hook it to any possibly negative connotation thing that they can come up with, like, oh, climate change deniers or fundamental Christians or people who are anti-evolution, which is pretty funny to me since I have a degree in evolutionary biology. But it's just, they're just trying to hang it on anything to make us look bad, even though they just finished saying how fantastic we were, just because we've come up with a different interpretation from the exact same data. So it's crazy. I don't understand how somebody who could do such great work then turns it around and just tries to say we're crazy people somehow.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to debate somebody like that, which is why they would never do it.
Oh, they do. Honestly. They do on my page. They do on my group page. Oh. I frequently have people who are professionals. I have quite a few medical professionals and all that kind of stuff. And I do have people who come on for the purpose of pushing back on me and trying to say, oh, but this data, that data. And this is basically how I built up what I have. I mean, this particular ethnography was only over March through September of last year. And I didn't start my Understanding Ohio COVID-19 data page until the end of October. I was just one of the people who was commenting in that time frame. And what I've done since in my group is even more intensely this kind of teaching people how to go into that data. And I do get a lot of people who are talking about, one person's from Ontario who very frequently comes in and says, well, you know, in Ontario, we do have the B117 and it's terrible. And see, we have all these hospitalizations increasing. And the way you have to engage with these people is you have to actually take whatever they say, and then you have to take it apart piece by piece by piece by piece. But you can't, it doesn't work in a Twitter realm. It only works in a place, I think, like Facebook, where you have the time and the word space to really get in and answer every single one of them. And I mean, that's basically what I do try to do is engage with those people in a respectful way, and in that way also show other people how you can counter these arguments of, oh, but some authority says, or this paper says, okay, well, let's go. Let's look at this paper. Let's look at the assumptions that they have made. Let us look at the actual meat of the paper. Let's look at the results, not just the abstract and conclusion. Let's look at the data itself. Go back. And it's amazing the change in a lot of these people who used to come on just to roll eyes and call us anti-vaxxers or whatever, COVID deniers. And a lot of them have now come over. I mean, they're still not on the side of this is stupid, this is dangerous, but they definitely come around. Takes a long time, but they come and they listen. And I think we really need to keep working on that as well.
Well, that is at least encouraging that every once in a while we do see that, because sometimes it feels like people have just dug in their heels so much after 14 months that it's just hard to get much movement. But I really thought people would be impatient to resume life. Maybe I just enjoy life more than some of these people. Like I'm really trying to figure out psychologically why you wouldn't at this point be scouring the internet for good news. Is there any reason I should be hopeful for the future and then maybe kind of latch onto that? I don't know, because I enjoy my hobbies and I enjoy travel and all the things I used to do a whole lot. So I'm kind of, you know, in a way, I'm inclined to look for positive numbers and news and stuff. That's just the way I am. I don't know why more people aren't that way, because there is plenty of it to be found everywhere. And there was just an article that came out in the Times over in London saying that large unmasked gatherings are no more dangerous than going shopping, a new study finds. So I wrote to a friend of mine who's a lead singer in a metal band, and I said, I wish you could sue these SOBs for damages after what you just endured in 2020. And now they say, turns out it's not really a problem. Okay. Anyway, for people to find you're more active, much more active on Facebook than Twitter, but I'm going to put both of them on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1903. But if people don't go to the show notes page, what's the quickest way to find you?
Definitely Facebook. It's Understanding Ohio COVID-19 Data. That's where I'm active. I actually very rarely am on Twitter. I also have it on MeWe. I have people who transfer it over for me. So the information that I do put out is put out on Twitter, which is kind of hard just because I'm pretty wordy. I use a lot of words. I don't like having my characters restricted. But if you want to, you know, engage with me and talk with me, Facebook is unfortunately the platform of choice for me. So, but that's the way to get there.
Okay. I'll link to all that stuff on the show notes page. And I'll say, because I'm in your group, that as you know, you have one heck of a community in there. Really, really smart, engaged, passionate, interested people who are also courteous, good listeners, encouraging. I mean, just the kind of people you want to be around during a time of so much negativity.
Well, one thing I do want to say about that, I want to give kudos to some of the people who are in my group. One thing that's gone on about this whole Vax-a-million thing that's gone on in Ohio, right? They are claiming that we've had a boost because of the Vax-a-million.
By the way, not everybody knows what that is. It's giving away. You can win $1 million in a lottery kind of thing if you get vaccinated.
Yes, you can win $1 million if you've been vaccinated, and they're going to use you as a propaganda piece. You'll probably be in commercials. Your name will be announced. You cannot dodge that or anything like that. So you can win $1 million for getting vaccinated in the state of Ohio, and so there's been an increase in the number of vaccines given. And they're attributing it to the Vax-a-million. Now, the thing is on the very same day he announced this $1 million lottery, that was the first day that 12 to 15-year-olds were allowed to get the vaccine. Now, the fun part is the data that the state of Ohio gives us does not, in terms of their downloadable CSV file, does not spread break out the ages of the people who are getting the vaccinations on these different days. But they do have on their webpage a dynamic interface where you can go in every single day and you can look at the numbers of each of those age groups, how many people have been vaccinated. But it changes every single day. It's not saved or recorded. But people in my group I have about 60 of them right now who have been collecting that data daily off the website from the graphical interface. And so we have a database now created by these people, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of effort. And because of that, I can show absolutely, it is unambiguous that the increase that we have in Ohio from that $1 million lottery or $5 million lottery, that is all due to children getting the vaccine and not what they're saying right now on TV, that it's because of the Vax-a-Million. So it is important to have this community. It's important to not just accept what you're given in terms of the data, but to go in, collect it yourself, and see for yourself what is really happening, and to have that group of people who can do it.
Wow, that is great. That is great. I have a great group myself, and I'm very grateful for. We're not focused on this in particular, but of course, you know, a lot of people want to talk about that, understandably. It makes my life a lot easier and happier. And as I say, I also just enjoy the fellowship of these people at a time when I can't tell if people I see on a daily basis are crazy or not. You know, so it's kind of nice to be in a community of people whose mental state is sound. Well, speaking of that, Catherine Hewig is one such person I've been very glad to get to know. And I got to know about you through Twitter. So it is not lost on people. That is a good use of effort. And as I say, I'm going to link to where people can find you at tomwoods.com/1903. And thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me again.
All right, folks, got some juicy episodes coming up for you this week. Among them, appearances by the outspoken Ron Paulian Iowa State Representative Jeff Shipley, whom I've known for a long time, and he's always up to no good, in a good sense of no good. Michael Malice will return to the show. For a couple of days, he's had the number one book in nonfiction on all of Amazon, with no publisher behind it, with no marketing department, with no launch, no nothing. In my 20 years of being involved in book publishing in one way or another, I have never seen a phenomenon like this. So we're going to talk about that when we have him back on. I got a couple other ideas for guests for this week. I just make sure we can line them up. I don't want to promise something I can't deliver. Make sure you're subscribed to The Tom Woods Show on a podcast app. And of course, if you like and appreciate what old Woods is doing here, then become a supporting listener. Man, do you get a lot of goodies as a supporting listener of The Tom Woods Show. It is unbelievable, not to mention access to an exclusive reception with me before the 2000th episode of The Tom Woods Show, the big event we're having in Orlando. And then I have a super duper duper deluxe exclusive reception for folks at the platinum level and higher in the hospitality suite with all the special guests. What a great time that's going to be. So become a supporting listener over at supportinglisteners.com, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.